Bring this meeting of House Fisheries Committee to order. It's the 25th of January. It's about 8:35 in the morning. Present are Representative Ledoux, Representative Johansson, Representative Edgman, myself, Representative Seaton, and Representative Johnson is excused this morning. Two other members are presently in a finance subcommittee in another room, and they will join us as soon as they are able to. Today we're going to hear House Bill 321, Product Development Tax Credit. And also, just for everybody's knowledge, next week, on Monday, we will have our second and should be our final hearing. Intention will be to move out House Bill 289, Employment Tax Exemption on Spill Response. And then Wednesday, we will be looking at HB 16, Limited Entry Sunset for Crab and Scallop, and that is also going to be with a review of the last Department of Fish and Game Commercial Fisheries Division on scallop management and their proposals for the Board of Fish for possible change in management strategies for the state water fisheries. Friday we will be hearing HB 41, that's the transfer of habitat division from DNR to Fish and Game. We've heard that several times. We'll review if there's any other new information to come out, and then it's my intention to move that bill from committee if we have agreement. So is there, there is something else to come before the committee, and that is that my cell phone went off last time during a meeting, and so homemade cookies were the penalty, and so actually we have enough we can share with the audience as well. So take that for your cue that if you have a cell phone, you might want to check and make sure that it's on vibrate or not going to ring anyway. Is there anything else before we get started on this bill? If not, Representative Thomas was indisposed. He wasn't able to be with us here this morning, so his staff is here. So would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with the presentation of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas. And I want to thank you for hearing House Bill 321 this morning. I think what I'll do is just give you a brief summary of how this tax credit has been working and a little bit of background on it, explain two changes which are in the minor clarifications that are in the CS that you have before you. And then I will turn the seat over to some of the folks who are here to add further detail to this this program.
Okay, and before we do that, let's, Representative Edgman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that for discussion purposes that CS for House Bill number 321, version M, be on the floor.
Okay, thank you. We've had motion for version M, committee substitute we have before us for the working document. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we have that version before the committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit is basically just an incentive to add value to Alaska salmon in Alaska. And the credit expires on December 31st of this year, and that's the meat of the bill. Mr. Chairman, it's just extending that termination date through 2011. This credit applies to the fisheries business tax that you're all familiar with. It's a tax levied on the ex vessel value of fisheries resources. Essentially, it's at the point of first sale, which is, of course, usually when transferred from a fishing vessel and purchased by a processor. The program allows a claim of up to 50% of the cost of qualified investments. And in new property, and there are several restrictions on that. It must be new. It must be predominantly for salmon, used for salmon. Must be used for value-added products, and these are products that some of you have probably been seeing on supermarket shelves in recent years. New types of salmon products like pouched fillets, portions, vacuum-packed products, salmon burgers, for example. And the tax credit program originated with the Joint Legislative Salmon Industry Task Force. It was, in fact, one of the key pieces of legislation that came out of that effort, and it took effect in 2003 when, of course, we had severely depressed salmon market, mostly due to the influx of farmed salmon. And this credit is playing a critical part in helping the industry to retool and modernize. We're seeing some really positive trends. For example, less product is going into the older, tall cans. We're seeing more going into fillets, and we're seeing an increased diversity of products, which, as you'll hear more about later, is really important in customer acceptance of salmon. And some other very important trends, we're seeing the average value increasing, state revenues from fisheries business tax also, and important to fishermen as well, is that the permit values for salmon permits have increased considerably since this credit program went into place. So the sponsor strongly believes in renewing this credit for an additional 3 years. It's an investment in the health of our economy and our communities. It's one of the ways that government can help to shepherd the industry through this process, and it does need to continue. There's still a lot of challenges remaining. I guess at this time I'd like to summarize the two changes in the CS that are essentially simple clarifications, the first of which is on page 2, and that's between lines 11 and 15. Mr. Chairman, I worked with your staff, Louis Flora, on this language to include conveyors as one of the types of eligible equipment, and this is really just a matter of fairness. This new language is going to allow conveyors that meet the other qualifications for equipment to be included, and it's going to say that they have to be specifically used in the act of producing a value-added salmon product. In working with the Department of Revenue on this, they wanted to be sure that we also put in some new language in the list of ineligible items, just to be sure that we don't get any confusion. Certain conveyors should not be included, but so that's a new section in here that's just a matter of you know, conforming with the original intent of the legislation. The second new addition is on page 2, line 24, in section 3, new section 3, and this just allows for a process whereby a processor can come to the Department of Revenue when they're considering purchasing some new equipment and get a preliminary determination of eligibility. This is just a matter of practicality. I mean, if someone's going to invest in something that's often of considerable expense, they'd like to know ahead of time if it's going to qualify or not so that they can plan accordingly. So, Mr. Chairman, that's a brief summary of the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit and the two changes in the bill. Before I turn the seat over to some of our guests, I'd just like to answer any questions that you may have.
Yeah, I have one, and that is on the new section here under conveyors. That is meant to be a going forward change from this time forward, not a retroactive change that would influence any previous determination. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. It would take effect at the same time. You know, Section 5 just says it's an immediate effective date, so
okay.
It would be going.
And I just want it clarified for the record that, as I understand the legislative intent of this, this is not to go back and reanalyze or refocus on when the past tax credit was used or any past tax credit denials, and then all of a sudden have to go through a review process and recertify or anything. This is strictly a change from or a clarification from this point going forward. And so if that's the sponsor's intention as well, then?
Yes, that's the sponsor's intention.
Okay, thank you. Representative Johansson.
Ian, on the preliminary qualification, it sounds logical. Have there been instances where that's become a problem? Is that why the change, or just that it seemed logical to do?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I can't enumerate any instances at this moment, but it's my understanding in speaking with representatives of the industry that it has occasionally been an issue, and so, yeah, it's just kind of a logical clarification.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions? I guess in some of our backup material, we do have, and have you address it, and then when the department's up, we have the list of, let's see, it's in this backup material for the that has a salmon credit tax, the second page of that, which lists the product development expenditure categories, the qualified and non non-qualified. And the question of down near the bottom there, there's the fillet line is as a non-qualified expense. Can you let me know the sponsor's consideration of that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I think the sponsor clearly would think that a fillet line is should be a qualified expenditure.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. And we'll get the tax division to address that as well when they're up. Let's see. Does anyone else have any other questions for Ian? Seeing none, thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hope to stay around. We may have more. Maybe we should have the tax division come up next, if you. Good morning. Welcome. Would you
Good
identify
morning.
Yourself for the record? And do you have testimony or are you just questions?
I'm just here to offer a brief comment on the working draft and then also just to explain a little bit, if I can, the handouts that we gave Representative Thomas's office. And then I have available here Dan Stickle from our research economic research group, as well as if questions are wanted, we have an auditor in Anchorage standing by.
Great, thank you very much.
My name is Tim Cotton, Jim. I'm the manager of the Fish Tax Group within the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. I appreciate the opportunity to respond to the bill. Mr. Chairman, at the request of Representative Thomas's office, we provided some general information on the salmon credit. The first page of the documents that we gave Representative Thomas reflects the total number of companies that have claimed the credit from the beginning until up until 2006. We don't have 2007 figures as yet. Tax returns were filed in March 31st of this, or will be filed in March 31st of this year, so that information is not yet available. It also includes the total development expenditures, and then it reflects the credits, which represents approximately 50% of that amount that they're claiming on their fisheries business tax returns. And then the next number is the credits denied at audit. I just wanted to point out to the committee that these are tentative numbers. The audits are still ongoing. There's still some appeals cases involved, so these numbers will change, I'm sure, as we go along throughout the year. And then, of course, the last is the net amount. The second page reflects the tax division's at audit interpretation of the existing statute. So on one side we have the qualified expenditures, and on the other we have the non-qualified expenditures. If I could just go in briefly and discuss the one item that you were concerned about, Mr. Chairman, which was the filleting line. When the bill was originally crafted, the sponsors discussed the intent that it be used to, the credit being used to encourage new investments and new value-added salmon products. It was our understanding from the original language that the credit was for equipment items that were performing certain functions. Those functions being the processing, the packaging, and the product finishing function. The renewal of the credit in 2006, the sponsor referred to, as you have here, I think, the need to modernize the industry. And so when we were looking at these bills and interpreting this, it was our view that only equipment items that were performing these functions, these processing functions, these packaging functions, these product finishing functions, qualified for the credit. So to explain the items on the right side of this list that are non-qualified, these represent, and I apologize if the language isn't clear, these were just language that we used for purposes of our audit tracking. When we refer to filleting line, to that, for that is for us to mean non-machines. It means the actual conveyor belt, a table of some kind where there are folks that are hand filleting. Versus on the other side of the equipment that do qualify, we have listed here a fillet machine, where the machine actually performs the filleting. We felt that qualified based upon our interpretation of the existing statute. the conveyor, the tables, what we at audit consider to be a fillet line, we did not think qualified, and that's why it's on that side of the list. And then lastly, on the second page, or the third page, we have a list of those general reasons why we had denied the credit. These are just generic reasons, just to give you a sense for the general reasons why these were denied. I would just briefly like to speak to the working draft and the language added about the conveyors. I appreciate the fact that, Mr. Chairman, you highlighted that this is simply going to be represent a change going forward and not a clarification. One of the concerns that we have with this language is that it's the lack of specificity would, we think, result in some confusion by the taxpayers, and we think the more specificity the better. So if there's a way to firm up that language, we're happy to work with you to firm that up. Again, knowing that we have used our interpretation of requiring equipment that performs this function, it's not clear to us by reading how this reads that whether this is something that's different from what we've done before, and therefore we need to clarify what specifically you mean by conveyors used specifically in the Act.
Okay, thank you. We'll Representative Johansson?
On the qualified and non-qualified expenditures, what's the process for determining which goes in which category, and how often do you do it, and what is your coordination with the processors in gathering information to make your decision?
I can have the auditor speak to that if you like, but just in general terms, when we inspect a processing facility, we go through and determine how the equipment is used. We request information about the amount of products that are produced, the type of species that's that this equipment is used for. We check things like the manufacture date on the equipment to ensure that it's new. We compare that to invoices and shipping documents to confirm that this was first placed in service in the state of Alaska. And then from there, again, we've followed the interpretation that if the equipment itself is not performing one of these functions, whether it was processing, packaging, or product finishing function, then we think it's pretty obvious after you've looked at it that it either is on the left side of this that qualifies or the right side.
How, if I may follow up.
No, follow up, Representative Johansson.
And how often do you review these? I mean, it seems like we've heard from industry they're constantly changing and trying to get into new markets and be more efficient and get more value out of the product. So they're aggressively going after ways to basically increase the value. And I'm sure as a private company, they're going as hard as they can, and new things must be coming online. I mean, how often do you review this? Every year, every couple of years?
As far as reviewing our interpretation of what qualifies and what doesn't,
yeah.
Representative Johansson, to the chair, we take this on a case-by-case basis in each audit. So we realize and recognize that each audit and each company has unique equipment, unique processing. So we haven't really attempted to fit a particular item in a compartment and leave it there. This list here that I have is a running list. It started out when we first audited with probably five or six items, and it's since grown.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Our resident Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said a moment ago that the language might be more specific regarding the provision for the conveyors. And just reading it here, it looks pretty specific to me in terms of going forward and developing regulations and implementing and all that stuff. But what would you suggest in terms of making that more clear, more concise?
Representative Edgman, through the chair. My concern has to do with what was meant by in the act of producing. whether or not you consider the act of producing and where that starts and where that ends. Just to give you a rough example, you can see on the list totes listed as items that folks have claimed, wanted to claim a credit on. And the position there was we must have the totes in order to get the fish to the processing lines. Therefore, you know, it's important in the act of producing the value-added salmon product.
Tim, I guess part of the, I did sit on the Salmon Task Force and was part of these discussions. And when we're, generally when we, and in here as well, are talking about value-added product, value-added processing, we're not making the distinction of saying we got to displace all people. If we displace people, then we are, that's value-added. What we're talking about is the product and having a, going from a round fish or even a headed and gutted fish and then doing something else with that fish to have a value-added process. And whether it's the machine that does the flay and the removal of the pin bones, or if you have a something configured that is out of the ordinary that is integral to that process, that allows people to remove those in a different way. The product is value-added product. If you have someone, if you're slicing and you're making lox, and if you have hand slicing, or if you have machine slicing, you still have a value-added product. And what we're trying to do throughout this whole thing is to get the quality and the product lines and the diversity of product line and more employment in Alaska. And it seems that the way, and I'm not blaming anybody for this because, you know, it's the way the law gets written and interpreted, but it seems like it only counts if we eliminate people. And I don't think that that was the task force intent to say eliminating people is what's there. It's if you are, you know, investing in equipment that allows you to specifically go from a unfinished product to a finished product or change the product, then that is the behavior that the credit is trying to stimulate. And in fact, I think that there is a pretty good case to be made that if you have a, if you come out with a value-added product that employs more Alaskans over a longer period of time, that that's really the most desirable end in value-added processing. It's not just for a company, it's the effect of taking that round product and further processing it in Alaska for Alaskans and Alaskan community. So I think that that's, you know, that's the interpretation where I would like to have the discussion with the committee and of course and find out where the committee is. But I think that that's the what Representative Edgman is trying to get at, how much more specific. And you've been given some pictures there, and I'd like to draw the committee's attention to those pictures. Now, these were taken in a plant in Kenai or in Kasilov. And this is a fillet line, and there are some pictures in there. On the second page, you can see it going into a pin bone machine and the trim line. And on the third page, you see these, what you would call conveyors, but of course, they're not conveyors just for the movement of product. This is a special belt that you cut right on. You cut on the belt so that it doesn't cut. You have all of these devices. If you look on the final page in this denied portion that was a conveyor belt, you see all the hydraulically adjustable steps where the people are able to get at the right height to work on that for the varying employees. So you've got a very specific design You got a lot of money put into something to come out with a value-added product, and yet, because of the criteria or the way we had had this in there, or the interpretation of that, you know, this would be denied as a conveyor belt. And so what we're trying to do is through this language, get that if you have something that's specifically designed for the value-added processing, and it's integral to this line or to this process, that just because you use people doesn't disqualify it. And I think that that's the, I think that that's what Representative Edgeman and myself are trying to get across as a criteria there. Does that make any clarity for you of where we're trying to go and what we're trying to talk about in conveyors versus a conveyor that's moving fish? Everybody knows what moving fish is, but where you have something integrated into value-added processing, it doesn't seem that denial of the expenditure, which if you didn't have that expenditure, you wouldn't have value-added product, you know, doesn't seem to be the intent of where we were trying to go. Is that understandable?
Yes, Representative Eaton, I appreciate you clarifying that. And I guess to the extent that you were referring specifically to fillet line conveyor system, that's the kind of information or language that would, I think, be helpful to the department, as well as, I think, to the public to know that the specific, if that's what you're specifically referring to.
Representative Johansson.
Yeah, you testified earlier that when you look at these qualified and non-qualified expenditures, that you do it on a case-by-case basis. And following Representative Edgeman's comments about regulations, one of the great frustrations I think lawmakers have is when the department has such broad leeway in a lot of cases to interpret statute and loosely write regulations. In this case, I think it would be very easy for you to interpret that. If you're going to go into and look at this on a case-by-case basis, I think the language is just fine the way it is.
Mr. Chairman?
Just a moment. Representative Johansson? Representative Edgeman.
Well, to follow on the comment that Representative Johansson just made, as I read this, there's two terms here that would provide that so-called leeway, and one is specifically, because that's sort of a term of art, unless that's defined otherwise. And certainly the other part is the one that you just pointed out, in the act of producing. So, and I looked at the bill here pretty closely, and I don't see specifically anywhere else in the bill, and I understand the intent of this new language, but might it be more simpler just to say conveyors used to produce value-added salmon product?
And Representative Edgeman, I don't think it was the intent of the original formation of the bill that if you had a line and you had a conveyor that was taking fish off of the end or bringing fish to the line, that those are conveyors that can be used throughout the plant. You can move it from one thing to another. So, you know, what I'm trying to get here is the realization that value-added product is, you know, it's not the stuff going off the end and over to the boxing liner and moving boxes. Those conveyors are conveyors that we're not saying, okay, this is value added. But just clarifying between you and me, since we're talking about the bill, that was the intent of this. It's something that's integral into the value added product processing and not something that is moved from one part of the plant and use a tote dumper. You know, tote dumper may be used in one part of a line and then it's taken off and used someplace else later. So no one is saying that those kind of things. But I think that something that's integral into the processing, as is obvious, these with specialized cutting belts and those kind of things, that's what we're getting at. So if you have other language that you need for clarification, since you guys are the tax division and you're going to be making these determinations, we want to make sure it's clear enough for you to understand what we're talking about. I think it is, but Representative Johansson.
Do we have some folks from the industry side up to testify? Because until I hear the whole story, I don't necessarily want to say I support or don't support it. But from half the story, it sounds pretty good. But are they signed up to testify?
Yes, we have several people set up to testify. We also have in our packet we have letters of support from, just put this on the record because some of these people aren't going to be there to testify. Wrangell Seafoods, from Alaska General Seafoods, from Icicle Seafoods, from Peter Pan, from Alaska Glacier, and from Inlet Fish Producers. So in our record, but we do have people in the audience. Yes.
Is WorkCraft M, does that come out of the sponsor's office? Where's Ian at? Is he in here still? Okay.
And for the record, that was an affirmative from the sponsor's office. Is there anything else for the tax division at this point in time? Okay, thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And now we will go to testimony. We have some people here in the audience that are here to testify. We have Dan Stickle.
He was just up there.
Oh, Dan and Tim were up here, sorry. Mary McDowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mary McDowell. I've been before you a number of times in the past, but this year with a new hat. I'm now Vice President of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association, which is known as PSPA and has been in existence since 1914 as a trade association to represent Alaska seafood processing companies. First, I'd like to thank Representative Thomas for introducing this bill and Chairman of this committee and the committee for hearing it so quickly. Three of PSPA's member companies are salmon processors. They're Peter Pan Seafoods with shore plants in Valdez, King Cove, Port Moeller, and Dillingham, Alaska General Seafoods with shore plants in Ketchikan and Naknek and a herring buying station in Sitka, and North Pacific Seafoods, which owns Sitka Sound Seafoods in Sitka, Alaska Pacific Seafoods in Kodiak, Peterson Point in Bristol Bay, and Togiak Fisheries in Togiak. All of these companies have made very good use of this tax credit program to advance the goals of the tax credit by developing and expanding new and value-added salmon products, helping Alaska's salmon products keep pace with evolving consumer demands, and keeping Alaska's fisheries competitive in world markets. And I would draw the committee's attention to some of the letters that Representative Seaton just pointed out from the companies in your packets. And also, there will be testimony from other companies following mine that will describe how companies have used this credit, the kinds of improvements that they've been able to make, and how much sooner they've been able to develop these new products and get them onto markets than they could have done without this tax. And the legislature did construct this tax credit very tightly, as you've just discussed, to specifically meet certain goals, and I really believe it's been very successful in doing that. But there is a lot more to do to maintain that momentum and to ensure that our products are holding their place in the world marketplace. I would like to touch on one enormous impediment right now that's impeding industry's ability to make investments needed to do these things on their own, and that's the skyrocketing cost of energy. That processors, for the most part, operate in rural Alaska, where, of course, energy costs are the highest and the needs are also the highest to provide economic benefits and the economic activity that fishing and seafood processing provide. And those energy costs are eating up a lot of the profit margins that could otherwise go into this sort of activity. And so that this tax credit adds that extra little push, that ability to get over that hump and go ahead and bridge that gap and make that investment now instead of waiting until later, despite the growing demands and burdens of high energy costs. And by doing this, they add value to every pound of salmon that is processed. And that's an important thing that keeps that value high for fishermen, communities, state coffers through the raw fish tax, and so on. I know that you, as state policymakers, are grappling now with how to best use and invest the little uptick we have in revenues right now. And I see the extension of the salmon tax credit as exactly the kind of investment that we ought to be making with those revenues. And to support this movement now and in the next couple of years, we know that we need to encourage economic diversification in this state, prepare for the future, ensure that Alaska products are competitive in the world, and to make the best possible use of our natural resources, bring the most benefit back to Alaska that we can. And this bill promotes all of that and moves us towards all of those goals. I think another thing that's important to note is this is the kind of tax credit that pays for itself many times over in the future. If we can move products into a higher value now, that value will come back to Alaska in a number of ways in the future. So this is an investment that will have high returns for the state. So again, I thank you for hearing this bill quickly, and with the 90-day session, I hope that you'll move it quickly and we'll support it all the way through the process. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mary? I had one, and that is, you've heard our debate a little bit here on value-added product. Does the association generally agree that value-added product is what we want to see, or is it only if it's mechanically done? I mean, employing people, is that seen as something that we need to get away from employment of local people and only talk about machinery? Or if people are involved in the product, is that in the processing, is that something that also is valuable for your association?
You know, I have not had the specific question about that language and that distinction in the bill with our folks, but I would think that everyone would fully agree that whether you use human beings or machines or a combination of both, if you're adding value, that's the intent and that's the goal. And of course, you know, the idea of employing more people in the industry has benefit to the state as well. So it seems to me that whether it takes people or machinery or a combination, as long as you are moving toward the goal intended here, that makes sense to me. And having that legislative intent on the record, I think, makes sense.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Seeing none, thanks again, Mary.
Thanks a lot.
Next we have Mark Palmer. And before we begin, I would like to recognize that Representative Holmes and Representative Wilson have joined us. And yes, when we started, Representative Ledoux was the first person here.
You get extra credit.
You get an extra cookie. By the way, for you folks that weren't here early, there are cookies for my cell phone going off last time. Welcome, Mr. Palmer. Would you go ahead with your testimony if you would like to bring, if you want to testify together, you may do that, or you can testify separately.
I think we'll, good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I think we'll testify separately, so we've kind of chunked this up in our areas of responsibility.
Would you identify yourself and your company for the
Mark
record?
Mark Palmer, the president of Ocean Beauty Seafoods. Ocean Beauty is is an Alaskan corporation that has 7 processing plants here in the state. We operate from Southeast Alaska through Bristol Bay. Salmon is our core product line of the company. We've recently been partners and have 50% of the company has been acquired by the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, so we're now a partner with the CDQ Group as well. When we talk about adding value to the products that we produce, and especially salmon, there's a lot of competing interests on where that can be done. It's not just the state of Alaska. There's resources in the lower 48. There's offshore processing that's available. And it's a big decision for a company to make to invest in a value-added product line. It's very much the tip of the iceberg when you make a decision to invest in value-added product in Alaska. This summer, we will put a line in our NACNIC facility, and the cost of the fillet line will be over $2.5 million. And it's not just because that's $2.5 million worth of equipment. It takes 45 more people to operate a fillet line. We have to build additional space in bunkhouses. We have to build additional space in mess halls. Most of our factories are located in remote locations, and we generate our own power there. And so when you do plug in new machinery, you have to generate extra power to do that. And so, you know, all of those things really fall outside of this tax bill. And the things that it does support, whether it's machinery or conveyor equipment or whatnot, is a real incentive for us to help make a decision to invest in a very seasonal operation. They're significant pieces of equipment. Some of these things are $500,000 fillet machines, and it takes skilled people to maintain and adjust them. And it's really led to some significant job creation. I think, you know, the intent of this bill was to add salmon value to the salmon itself and benefit harvesters, but it's also had a direct impact on the type of people that we employ, the type of training that we're giving now, and these are significant jobs. We think the bill has worked wonderfully. With seven facilities, we have not yet affected all of them. We still have our Cordova, our Petersburg, and our Cook Inlet plant that have not directly benefited from this tax bill. We've been progressively doing it, and we intend to go forward. This really adds a lot of, juice to it. It expedites a lot of the things that we would like to do are happening a lot quicker because of this tax bill. And, you know, I'm going to invite, you know, Tom Sunderland, our director of marketing, to talk about new products that we've developed. But we've had a very positive impact on the market in both prepared frozen foods and smoked products. And it's made a big difference over the last 5 years. We were really struggling 5 years ago as an industry. Pink salmon was an albatross around almost everyone's neck at the time. And this year, we've come out of two big years, back-to-back pink years. We had no carryover can pack. We haven't been long on anything in that mix, and it's tripled the value to the harvester. So we have been able to right-size for the commodity markets, and this has been a big part of it.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark, my question is, I know lots of times on those conveyor jobs that, you know, where they're filleting and things like that, lots of times it's hard to get Alaskans to do that. Could you tell us, do you think you'll be able to replace when you hire, or have you hired them already, how many of them were Alaskans?
You know, the Department of Labor, we had numbers from them that of the majors, you know, we had the highest percentage of Alaska hired. Tom, do you remember off the top of your head what our percentage of Alaska hired was?
We're the highest,
24. And we listed, I think, over 300 jobs with the Department of Labor, and they were able to fill a pretty good chunk of them, but not all of them. We still had to recruit outside for a lot of these positions.
Thank you. Representative Johann.
Yeah, Mr. Palmer, I think you hit on an interesting point that obviously it helps your companies directly. It helps the fishermen with the higher X value, X vessel, because of the value of the product that the gentleman behind you is selling. But also you mentioned construction and creation of facilities, which reaches out to the entire community. Obviously, you must hire electricians, carpenters, buy cement. Those people have to buy groceries, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not specific to you. I know this is obvious, but I think it's important to recognize that the effect of this travels well outside of the fishing industry and helps all the communities that you have plants in. So
we do. We hire a lot of contractors. We don't have all of that expertise in-house. And so every one of these projects has facilitated us going outside of our workforce and hiring local people to support us.
Representative Ledoux.
And do you feel that any of this new equipment that you purchased ends up with creating new jobs in the processing plants?
Specifically, this last summer, we were awarded a STEP grant through the Department of Labor, and we flew two technicians from Germany that work for Botter to Kodiak and conducted Botter training there. And we trained not just at Ocean Beauty, but some Trident employees participated as well. These were resident Alaskans that were trained to be botter techs. And so there's at least four new ones in Kodiak, and I think it's a direct result of that. So where we've put in this kind of equipment, we've had to hire and train people to maintenance. It is very sophisticated, very technical, but these are good paying jobs. They're not just conveyor line jobs. They're significant skills that can translate to other fisheries besides salmon around the state. This is equipment that's used in the whitefish fisheries and pollock and whatnot, and so I think that they are life skills that these people are learning.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
You mentioned the other day that these botter technicians earn around $100,000 a year. Were you able to take people who were working just as regular processors in the plants, making typical processing salaries, and train them to be botter techs, and now they're earning $100,000?
For the most part, the workforce comes out of your machinists. We have apprenticeships and machinists, and so we look for those people who kind of want to go that way. It's tough. Personally, and I don't think if one of those pieces of equipment broke, I could fix it in two lifetimes. But but those people that are mechanically inclined and enjoy that kind of work, we have an apprenticeship program within our machinists, and those are typically the candidates for training, and that's where that pool of labor generally comes from.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Palmer? Seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation.
Thank you.
Now we have Tom Sunderland.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My name is Tom Sunderland. I'm the marketing director for Ocean Beauty Seafoods. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, so I'll try not to infect anybody too badly. My responsibilities in the company, Mark, so we divide this up a little bit. In the broadest sense, it's my responsibility to look at the market and to look at what we manufacture and to figure how they align. And the salmon industry in Alaska for a long, long time was very well aligned. But as markets change, it's always dynamic, and one of the things about what we do is that yesterday is not like today. And in the salmon business in the past 5 or 10 years, things are almost nothing like they were in certain ways. And it's our job to be in advance of that, because we see all of a sudden a product we've been manufacturing and making money on for a long time, either we're now not selling it as well or not getting enough price to make a decent profit, a decent return, and so it's our job to change. And so that's where, one of the things that falls on me is to figure out which direction should we change, how should we go about this. And so one of the very next things that happens is that innovation in an industrial manufacturer almost always means more money. It just is a fact of life. I mean, I think certain people in certain service jobs can probably innovate with relatively low overhead costs. But as a manufacturer, it's either going to mean, as we've spoken earlier, it's going to mean equipment, it's going to mean labor, or it's going to mean both. A lot of these cases we're talking about, it actually means both. So as we look at this, as the market changes, as capitalism works around the world, as the market changes, we are forced to innovate. So immediately we're forced to spend money, because we've got the capital expenditure to make what we make now, and if the market says that's not cutting it, we have to make something new, we have to invest. So as we have to go to changes, we must invest. So when we go to make that investment, all of a sudden we're looking at, in the salmon business in particular, you're looking at a seasonal business. So you're not looking at something where we can run product through typically 12 months out of the year. In some cases, only a period of a few weeks. So we have a very difficult set of decisions to make, is how much can we make an investment that makes sense. And I think we saw a lot of companies over the past 15 years in the salmon business struggle and basically fail as a result of just how difficult it is to make this expenditure make sense. As one of the things that Mark just talked about, that the pink salmon business is changing so rapidly that I'm not sure anybody can really keep up with it. We're now canning half or just under half, which is almost unbelievable. The world market for this protein has really gone crazy, and things are doing extremely well with that. Now, that investment, like in our case, most of the investment that we've we've taken from this has gone into areas where we can produce pink salmon. And the growth net pink salmon, value has been coincidental with the with this tax credit. Now, not to take entire credit for it, I don't think it deserves all the credit for that, but it certainly deserves a lot of it, because our ability now to make a product that the market is now telling us it will respond to comes very much because of that investment. So now if we can make that investment, which we've certainly been able to do, it's certainly helped us out tremendously with this tax credit. Now we can make this investment. Now, as Mark said, now some of that certainly goes into equipment or different processing methods that require a very high degree of sophistication. So we've now created this thing where what happens is, the way I see this investment, I see it as a very good and proper investment for government to take an industry, because what ultimately happens, we do we can now do the necessary steps to innovate. Once we innovate, now it requires those jobs we were just talking about, which are basically legacy jobs. They're very high paying, they're very high skilled, they're very transferable, and that's created as a direct result of our ability to innovate in the industry. And then that's going to come back as a much better and higher higher paid part of the industry. So I brought a couple of examples of products. These are some products. Our first major production of these is next week, although I already have lots of orders lined up. Things are great. I just want to show, this is some of the things we've been doing with this. These are some, what these products are, I just have packaging. I can't show you the actual product here. But what they are, it's a tray product. You can see, I don't know if you can see from there, but basically this is pink salmon. Now we're making these out of affordable raw material. More material that people really didn't value very highly for a long time. But truthfully, around the world, people love pink salmon. It's mild, and everything's great about it. And we have a lot of it. So it's got vegetables and sauce. Basically, this goes directly from the freezer to the microwave to the plate. Okay, or you can oven it, too. I mean, it works either way. So these two products out of salmon, this type of thing, basically, is something that couldn't have existed before. And this really is ahead of the market. I mean, this really is doing our job to innovate to get to how consumers now eat. I mean, for better or worse, we're facing a world where people just don't cook like they used to, and people view this as, you know, as cooking from scratch, basically. So, but that's what the market is forcing on us. That's the world we live in. And so, but we don't have the option to live in a different world. We live in this one. And so that's what I want to say. That's what that's been able to accomplish for us has been that. So the production of these type of products, our ability to be ahead of the market, what our customers are asking us for and what consumers are really demanding, not what we want them to demand, but what they are really demanding, this has really helped our ability to do that. So, and I think for the future for us in the industry has a very big impact. And the last thing I'd like to say is, as Mark said, it's not remotely done yet. You know, I mean, what I don't want people to think is that salmon has gotten a little better. I mean, the market conditions are better, but there's certainly, this industry is certainly still quite fragile and has a lot of obstacles in there potentially. So the reason to continue it is for that reason. It does generate, I think, an excellent return for the states, an excellent investment, and the work isn't done. So, thank you.
Representative Wilson and Ledoux.
Thank you very much, and Tom, I notice that it's in English, so I assume it's going to be in this country
These are for pardon me. I'm sorry. Could I hand these out?
That's great.
Okay, these are for U.S. domestic retail. Okay, we've made these. If you see, they're all natural. You know, so we've basically followed the trends in convenience and health as much as we could. So.
And before we go to Representative Ledoux, are these a pouch product, a frozen product? What is?
These are, Mr. Speaker, these are frozen. So these are, this is just a frozen filet, all in a tray. The bottom of it sits frozen filet, vegetables and sauce sits on top. And so when you put it in the microwave, basically it poaches it. It'll poach it in the sauce, and you serve the whole thing. So it's not been retorted or cooked. This is a raw product.
Great, thank you. Let's see, Representative Ledoux.
It's kind of a series of questions. how much have you invested in this new equipment in order to do things like this? And how much would you have invested, do you think, if you hadn't gotten tax credit?
Representative Du through the speaker. I hate to punt on this question, but not being the finance guy, I think I'd prefer to defer to Mark or one of the finance people on the exact number of dollars. What I can say is that without these tax credits and the ability for us to put in filleting equipment and the ability to change the method of how we cut fish, we wouldn't, this product simply would not exist. The number of dollars is, I'll have to refer to someone else.
Representative Ledoux.
But since it's market driven and you say people want this product, why wouldn't you have put it in anyway?
Representative Ledoux through the speaker. The reason we wouldn't have is we wouldn't have had the ability to do it. We wouldn't have the ability to fill the orders to actually cut the fish or to actually treat the fish in a certain way if we hadn't had the equipment in place. So what I said is the difficulty for us is to look and say the market demands something that we can't necessarily afford. So if I can't afford to put the piece of equipment in, I can't meet the market. And I think one of the things that's happened in the salmon business in the past 10 or 15 years has been just that, that a lot of processors have found themselves in the position of, you know, certainly they're smart people. They know that they should be doing something else over here, but it just isn't, they can't pull it off. It just isn't economically feasible. It also takes a long time. You've got to develop a sales network to sell it and all that to meet with the market. But just to simply manufacture the product and to change your processes around comes at a very big initial cost. And with a plant like the line Mark referred to in Naknek, that's not going to run very long. We all know how those Bristol Bay fisheries are. It's going to run for a very compressed period of time. And so amortizing that whole cost over a very, very short fishery is hard to justify. And so what this bill gives us is a much better chance at a payoff for that. You know, we would try to meet the market if we could, but if it's still too much money, we won't. We can't make the investment.
Hey, are there other questions? Well, thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate the presentation.
Thank you, Chairman.
And then we have Tim, or no, we have, Tim Blott. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Tim Blott. I'm the plant manager at Kodiak. I've been plant manager there for 6 years now. When I first got there, we were a traditional salmon packer. We froze H&G, shipped to Japan. We did traditional canning, talls, half-pound cans. Over the last 3 to 4 years, we've progressively expanded our production. We went into fillets with high-tech pin bone removal machines. 3 years ago. Last year we went into skinless boneless canned salmon, pop top cans, half pound skinless boneless. This year we're doing skinless boneless vac pack canned salmon. These are the nuts and bolts of what this tax credit has allowed us to do. I think the question that came up earlier was, would this have been done without the tax credit? It probably would, because Representative Ledoux is correct. It's market driven. What this has allowed us to do has speeded up the process, get into the market quicker. Another question that came up was labor. When you think about it, we're still doing our traditional canned salmon. You have to. You know, there's so many salmon that come in at one time. But we also have another line with skinless boneless. We have another line with skinless boneless vacuum packed pouches. Those all require people too. Our labor force has expanded. It has not contracted. The equipment we buy is highly technical. We have received STEP grants, as you've heard, to train. We have a continuing, ongoing apprentice program where we bring out of both the machinist ranks and the processing ranks that go into the machinist ranks. We're fortunate in Kodiak that we have 100% local hire. 100% Alaskans, and they are learning and they are gaining from what this has allowed us to do. Another question earlier was on conveyors. We have one of those conveyors in question. It's used entirely and only for salmon. It comes out of fillet machines, goes down the conveyor trim table, then goes into the pin bone removing machines. And then we can either vacuum pack it or freeze it IQF or whatever Tom and everybody else develops and tells us how to produce it. So it's been tremendous. The difference in our plant in the last 5 years, it's an amazing situation. It really is.
Well, it sounds like the tax has been changing behavior, allowing you guys to change behavior faster than you would have otherwise, which is the purpose of the tax. So
I don't think there's any question.
Credit. So great. Are there any questions for Tim? Yes. Representative Benjamin.
So following up on the comment about conveyor belts, and the language in the bill says specifically used as opposed to some like predominantly used or some other sort of term of discretion. But does that apply to what you just described about your conveyor belts?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edgman, absolutely. I think, and I'm only guessing right now, but I'm thinking that this was put in to specifically address this type of conveyor that we currently have in the plant. And truly, it's entirely only for salmon. That's all we ever use. I mean, at the end of the season, it gets taken out and put away, and we go into something else.
So,
Representative Edgman, follow up.
So, for value-added products, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Let's go to Anchorage. We have somebody from the Department of Revenue for questions, if anybody has any questions for the Department of Revenue, any committee member. Okay, Julie Decker, are you online?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Just barely. Would you speak again so we can get the volume adjusted?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
It's still pretty weak.
Okay, I'll try to speak up.
Oh, that's better. Go ahead, Julie. Would you identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Julie Decker. I'm a representative for Wrangell Seafoods in Wrangell, Alaska. We are a smaller processor, and we've had some great testimony from some larger processors already, and I appreciate that good testimony. I would just like to say, from a smaller processor's point of view, this tax credit can be even more important to make these investments for our company. We get the vast majority of our revenue from salmon, and we do not have plants in the Bering Sea. We don't do lots of pollock, king crab, anything like that. So for us, this is very important. And in 2007, we invested in a complete overhaul of our plant, upgrading our equipment and expanding into what we will be using for value added in conjunction with the City of Wrangell's new cold storage facility. So we are very excited about stepping into the value added world, and we appreciate this tax credit and urge you to extend it into the future, because there is still a lot of room to grow for the processors in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie, and just wanted to note that we do have your letter in our paper record as well. Does anyone have any questions for Decker? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room here that would like to testify on this bill? Is there anyone else online that wants to testify? With that, then, I will close public testimony on the bill, and we have it before us for committee discussion. We have received no adverse comments from anyone either officially in the record or unofficially. If any member wishes to hold the bill for, has concerns about anything, I think we had the department address a question of specificity. I think that we might get them back up here again, but I think that our clarifications hopefully are good enough for that language. We're getting an indication. We'll get that on the record here. Tim, would you come back up? And so I just want to clarify, with what you've heard, and you've been given some photographic evidence as well as to what we're looking at, do you have any question of what the intent of the legislation is on conveyor and not including normal conveyors that are used in other aspects of the industry?
I don't. Thank you, Representative Seaton. I appreciate you helping to clarify that, and I think listening to the testimony as well as your description of what you had intended by that language makes it easier for me to understand. And if there is any remaining gray areas, I think we can probably address that in regulations with, you know, working with your office as well.
Okay. Thank you. We did have one other portion of this bill that there was some question about, and that was the predetermination. That was kind of a new thing. Tim, could you come back up again? And I would you identify yourself on the record
yes,
again?
Yes, I'm sorry. Tim Cotton Jim with the Department of Revenue.
And Tim, on the predetermination language, did you have any questions or any problems with that if somebody is submitting documentation and drawings and all those kind of things before they would step into making this investment? Is that problematic to you at all?
Representative Seaton, I don't think so. I think we can work out the details of that when we create these procedures and put together some regulations. I did mention to your aide and also maybe the aide for Representative Thomas's office that we would need approximately 120 days to actually have regulations in place, but that in the meantime, after the effective date of this bill, we could certainly create some procedures to work with in the interim until the regulations are in place.
Okay, very good. That's a good clarification. Before we release you from there, is there any other questions for the department? Tina, thank you very much. Committee discussion. Representative Johansson.
All right, I was going to move the bill, but let's see if anybody else.
Yeah, let's see if there's any further discussion. Representative Edgman. We are in committee discussion and trying to get any last comments. I do want to make everybody aware that I want to keep the bill if there's any questions that need to be solved on it. A 90-day session should not be used as reasoning for us to not do our adequate and appropriate job, and I want to make sure that we have full public input. I think we've had quite a bit this morning. So if there's a member that, you know, thinks that we need to hold this for concerns, I'll do that. Otherwise, I would entertain a motion. Representative Edgman, did you have a concern?
No, just merely to say that I support moving the bill out.
Okay. Representative Johansson.
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for House Bill 321, version M. Out of committee with individual recommendations.
And attached fiscal note.
And attached fiscal note. That's a zero fiscal note.
It's not a zero
it's
fiscal
a zero?
Note. No.
Then with attached fiscal note.
Thank you. So is there any objection to moving House Bill 321 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note? Seeing none, this bill will move from committee. Is there any other business to come before the committee today? Seeing none, we will be adjourned, and we will make sure you stay to sign the sheet before we leave. And we are adjourned at 9:47.